From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly politics podcast, though it's not really weekly of late. We've been on a hiatus.
We've been working hard.
People have forgotten about us.
And we about them. No, we kid.
That's Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly. And I'm John Myers from KQED, and yeah, we're back. Sorry for the delay and not having a podcast. We had multiple reasons. Let's see if I can roll back the clock. You were in Tahoe, and then we were working and couldn't get our schedules right, and then we were working and couldn't get our schedules right. Or actually, you ditched last
week.
Once
I just forgot.
Yeah, last week you ditched. You just forgot.
Okay,
well. I appreciate you admitting that, though.
Whoa. Well, you know, it's, well, never mind.
Let's just go on.
Yes.
And this podcast is for the week ending September 5th and September 5th.
That would be Saturday.
Oh, no, yeah, that's true. September 4th is your birthday.
It is.
Happy birthday.
186 years old.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You look good for your age.
Thanks.
All right. Well, so let's figure out what the heck we've missed, which is a lot of stuff to sit in.
Well, good
prattle
news.
About.
I think this is the first podcast in 3 months where we may not mention the state budget.
I think it's actually, well, we might have to mention part of the state budget because one of the topics here on the list gets back to it. But it's the first podcast in probably a year that at least we haven't focused on the budget.
And perhaps the last.
Yeah, really, exactly. It'll all come back to us after that.
Yeah.
All right, well, so rather than completely rehash everything we missed, we're sitting here. We still got a long list, and the way that we talk, man, this will be like an hour podcast.
That's right.
Sit back, have a cocktail, relax a little bit.
Or three.
The podcast will get much better if you listen to it that way.
We think so.
It's the cocktail podcast.
Da, da, da. Where's the lounge music?
And the clinking glass and the ice. All right, well, so first, totally not a cocktail subject, prisons.
Nice segue.
There's no transition to prisons from cocktails. So... this subject just keeps on going and going and going. For those of you who haven't followed every single moment of it, I mean, effectively where we're at is nowhere. I mean, I think this is yes and no. I know you're going to debate that in a moment, but let's put it this way. The Senate passed a prison reform package that stuck to the budget number. Ah, see, there's the budget. I told you it's coming back in the first one. Of a $1.2 billion savings total, I think the Senate package was around $600 million, something
right.
like that.
Well, of the $1.2, $400 has already been taken. Anyway,
exactly.
Yeah, about $600.
But it basically stuck to the financial need in the budget.
Right.
And it was, you know, you could debate whether it was expansive or not. It was probably fairly expansive for the legislature in terms of alternate plans on custody, a sentencing commission that would change the way that sentences are crafted, redefinition of some crimes to solely misdemeanors instead of possibly felonies,
right.
And on and on and on. It went to the assembly where a whole bunch of that stuff became controversial. They passed – I'm doing the short version here that you can take off from, Anthony. They passed a slimmed-down version that did less and saved less money.
Right.
And now – we're sitting, what I would argue, in limbo with two alternate versions and no timeline on reconciling the two.
Well, the timeline is the end of next week. I mean, the end of the session.
Yeah, if you're going to do it. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And if they don't do it, I guess the governor could call a special session on prisons. But
or you could just wait for the federal judges to act.
Well, and I don't think anybody wants that. I mean, you know, what happened in the assembly is that the plan ran into some political pressures. You've got a lot of people running for the state Senate. You've got 7 Democrats running statewide, I believe.
Maybe. A lot.
3 for attorney general, the top cop. And although one of those, Alberto Chirico, ended up voting for the scaled back prisons plan. But there was a lot of pushback from moderates and from some liberal members even in urban areas who had problems with pieces of the package that was passed by the Senate. So the assembly had pared back what the governor called a gutless version of the prisons plan, and now there's a $200 million difference, roughly.
$233 million, I think.
Well, Mr. Number.
Well, if you weren't 168 years old, you'd be able to have those mental facilities.
The math skills begin to erode after a while, but the assembly plan saves $233 million less than the Senate plan. Today, the Assembly Speaker Karen Bass said that the Assembly is now trying to make up that difference. So now we have 2 different versions of the bill moving, and the Senate is holding off taking up the measure again until the Assembly can come up with another piece of the package that makes up that $233 million difference.
Well, and that last part is what I focused on, and maybe this is the way we all focus on different things when we hear it.
That is a segue, Myers, right there. That's how you do it.
Yeah, we're not segueing where you're going just quite yet. But the last part is what I was focused on, what you said, which is what the speaker said on Thursday today, the day that we're taping this, and that is that she's okay with the Senate holding the bill until the Assembly can figure out its problems on a sentencing commission and alternative custody.
Right.
Well, those are huge issues. And so what I take that to mean is the bill ain't going anywhere until we get that fixed. And if we can't get that fixed, the bill might not go anywhere.
Maybe.
And
so, although,
I know no one wants the three-judge panel to act. But in a way, and let me just play devil's advocate, it could be a cleaner argument. Because the three-judge panel could come back. They gave us, for those of you, if you don't remember this, the three-judge panel said, the state, you've got 45 days to come up with a plan to reduce the prison population. And they basically said, they basically intimated, I'm not sure if they said it exactly, if you don't come up with a plan, we're going to come up with a plan.
Right.
But if the three-judge panel says, well, you lost it, you didn't do it in time, we're going to do it, then you know the state of California will appeal that decision to the United States Supreme Court.
As they did with this earlier ruling.
Right. And so if we have to wait for an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court anyway, then we actually effectively have more time because that's not going to happen overnight. You probably have until later in the year. You might even have until January to have to fix it. I guess what I'm trying to say is that no one would say that's the ideal way to go. But given the way things happen around here, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Well, and write that down. If it goes that way,
down, right now.
Write that down as an additional $1 billion hole in the budget. I mean,
correct.
That's the reason not to. I could see a scenario where the scaled back version, the assembly version essentially goes through the Senate, gets signed by the governor, and the panel comes back and says, no, that's not enough. Because remember, the panel of federal judges said that the inmate population had to be reduced by 40. Again, help me with my
about
40,000 inmates
over 2 years.
So even the Senate plan would only reduce the inmate population by about 27,000.
Well,
the estimates.
But yes and no. I think you might be apples and oranges there. Because
and donuts.
No. I think one's a 2-year projection. One was a 1-year projection. What I think I had read, and someone will email us because they always do. I think I had read that the Senate version came close. I don't know if it was on it, but close to the judge's panel. But your larger point is that it was
still short.
It still probably needs some work.
Right.
But I think some people wonder if the state got that close, might the judges say,
well, and
this is good.
The other question in this, which has been raised and no one has really answered and I have not pursued in any detail, is how much of this the governor could do unilaterally. He can't create a sentencing commission that has the force of law. He can't change these wobbler crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. But he could. He does have some executive powers on sentences, on individual sentences, and so.
Sentencing commission wasn't going to save us really money. It wasn't.
No,
it wasn't the real money saver in the package. In which case,
that was a reform idea that's been a priority for the speaker and for the pro tem.
But that buttresses your point there.
But the question is, how much leeway, as we saw with the budget, right? That when the deal got altered in the 11th hour, the governor had some leeway and some authority to make some additional cuts. Of course, that matters now in the courts. But so the question is, the governor's already on the record as calling the legislature gutless for not going far enough and kowtowing to some of these public safety groups. Can and would the governor then, if the legislature sends him an incomplete package, do some things on his own that could alleviate the population pressures inside and probably earn him some more conservative ire and some criticism from the public safety community?
Well, let's talk about the politics of this for a moment, because when that prison reform package passed the Senate, which it only passed the Senate barely.
21-19.
Yeah, the bare minimum it needed, 21 votes, and it landed over in the Assembly, both initially when they couldn't get the votes and then in the subsequent, what was it, like a week?
It was about a week.
That we had to wait before it actually came up for a floor vote. There was an awful lot of arm twisting going on from these interest groups. There was a whole lot of wrangling about what should be in it, what wouldn't be in it.
Right.
I mean, that was pretty intense, I would say.
Yeah. And I think even on the assembly plan, the if I'm not mistaken, the prison guards union continues to be opposed. So, and that, you know, that might have something to do with policy. That might also have something to do with politics, dynamics between the prison guards and the governor. You know, the pressure has been intense, and people who are running for statewide office especially or for state senate from the assembly are sensitive to those pressures. And I think it's just another example of the power that some of these entrenched groups have in Sacramento, whether it's labor unions or business groups or, in this case, public safety groups. So
I think there's some ruffled feathers, too, in the Senate, though, that the Senate, you know, effectively, especially Senate Democrats, we're talking about here, stuck their necks out for a proposal that the Assembly couldn't find the votes for. I mean, you know, whether it's a big ruffle, whether there are a lot of ruffle feathers or a few, I'm just saying, you know, there's at least a difference in opinion there.
And that's a continuation of some of what we saw on the budget deal as well, where senators put up unpopular votes for oil drilling and local government cuts.
Money.
The
yeah.
HUDA.
HUDA.
Which ended up not passing in the assembly. Although, you know what, this one was telegraphed. This is a different deal. I mean, they knew there were going to be problems in the assembly. Senators who I've talked to said that, look, there were already doubts about it getting out of the assembly, and that they chose to go ahead and start there. So,
well, actually, the pro tem Daryl Steinberg said that as much Wednesday or Tuesday or whatever day we did the little briefing with the press, where he described what happened, and he basically said, "I told them, you know, that the votes might not be there. I told my caucus, and they decided they wanted to move forward and take a stand." Yeah. So I mean, you're right. I mean, people knew it was going to be tough over there.
Right.
But I get back to, and then just to wrap up prison, since we've got all the other stuff on the top on the list here, get back to the whole idea that alternative custody and a sentencing commission. Let's just take alternative custody.
You mean early release?
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's not an easy one to fix, quote unquote, in the final week of session when you've got everything out there, right? Because it became described as an early release plan. I mean, whether it is or not depends on your politics, and you know, house arrest is that early release? Whatever. I don't want to go all there, but that's tough to do when you're in the final hours and you have so many other things on your plate, like.
That's a segue.
Water. But anyway, so we'll see how that goes.
So let's move on.
Let's briefly talk about water, which is kind of funny because you can't really briefly talk about water issues, either in California historically or just even where we are now. So we've got a special joint committee of the Assembly and Senate, a joint conference committee. What's that?
Hallelujah.
Yay, hallelujah. You're even doing a little praying sign there with your hands.
Stretching.
Oh, sorry. You got a special water committee that has been tasked to craft the package of water reform plans that have to be done by next Tuesday afternoon to possibly be on a floor vote as early as Thursday, because, of course, session's supposed to end on Friday, yada, yada, yada. But this one's complicated, and this one got really oddly political this week. I mean, I think we're going to step aside from the long policy discussion here, folks. You don't have enough cocktails for that.
No.
But we're going to talk about one of the little oddities of the politics part of it.
There are a couple of different oddities. One was the dynamic between the houses, where we saw early in the week, was it Monday? Was it or Tuesday? When
something like that.
When the Senate leader, Daryl Steinberg, came out and announced the conference committee.
I think that was Tuesday.
Announced the members of the committee and said, we'll be meeting at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Well, the Assembly was not ready for that, apparently. I don't know what discussions they had behind closed doors. I've heard different off-the-record versions about what happened from all sides. But the Assembly got caught a little bit flat-footed and resisted a little bit. I think the speaker was surprised, perhaps, to see Daryl Steinberg appoint himself to the committee. So then, of course, she appointed herself to the committee later on. And, you know, there's been a lot of complicated politics about this. The Latino caucus has gotten involved, and we wrote in our paper this week about a little skirmish, internal Latino caucus skirmish. And then there was this dynamic with the farm workers, the Farm Workers Union. United Farm Workers set up a committee last month specifically to oppose the water bonds.
Because we think that, let me just stop there for a minute, because part of the discussion is how do you pay for all of this?
Right.
And while we don't know the size of the bond measure, everybody says there's going to be after some amount of borrowing where you have to go to the voters and ask their approval for some bonds, probably.
Up to $11 billion.
Which is why we have a political element here. Go ahead.
Right.
Sorry.
And so the farm workers set up this political action committee and dumped $1 million into it early this week, And just coincidentally, they happen to have a bill authored by Daryl Steinberg on the governor's desk that has been their top legislative priority, not only in California, but
for a couple of years,
but nationally. And that's the so-called card check elections to make it easier for workers to unionize. And this has been a big fight, a big push from labor nationally. Legislation of this kind has reached the governor's desk before. I believe Carol Migdon from San Francisco, a Democrat from San Francisco, was an author, and the governor had vetoed it. And when this $1 million showed up miraculously,
which was from national union folks, I mean,
right.
It was a coalition of
including the service employees and the Teamsters and the UFW. That $1 million showed up. It was seen as a way to try to leverage, perhaps, support on the card check bill.
Also known as, if you sign it, we won't fight them. If you don't want to sign it, we'll fight the bond.
And how'd that work out?
Not so well, apparently. Or at least, I mean, or I mean, if it was a squeeze play, it wasn't squeeze play long, because I think it was like the next day. I think the money showed up in the account on a Monday, and by Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday morning.
The money showed up Tuesday afternoon, and by Wednesday afternoon.
By the next morning, or midday, the governor vetoed the farm worker, the card check bill. And
so much for that.
So we'll see what that happens. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of political wrangling because there's so many varied interests. There's the farming community, both farmers and farm workers. There's all of the people in Southern California who need water.
Right.
There are environmentalists who are worried about protection of the Delta.
Or just general about rivers and you know, about creating new dams and above-ground storage.
We use the term three-dimensional chess a lot in the Capitol about how negotiations go. This is like 45-dimensional chess, which I know doesn't exist. But the point is, there are so many layers of water debates and water policy.
Well, and you know, if you're looking for signs, I mean, you know, again, sort of focusing on the politics and not the policy, you know, Lois Wolk, a senator from Yolo County, Democrat, was lobbying hard to get on this committee to have a voice for the Delta, because one of the major issues is the building of, don't call it a peripheral canal, it's a new conveyance system that circumvents the Delta, that would essentially draw water from around the Delta and siphon it off to Southern California. Advocates of the Delta in Contra Costa, Yolo County area say this would ruin the ecosystem of the Delta. And the fact that Lois Wolk was not put on the committee, that there was no voice for a strong Delta voice on the committee, you know, led to a lot of people to believe, number one, that this deal is already cooked, that, you know, that while this conference committee is meeting Thursday for the first time, you know, that the deal is essentially being hammered out. I mean, this has been talked about for years now, right? So, and that perhaps there will be a peripheral canal or...
Except that, looking at the history of this year, I mean, and before this year, but let's just look at this year. The budget, deal hammered out in private, fell apart when it had to go to a full vote of both houses. Prisons, deal hammered out in private, fell apart when it had to go to a floor of both houses.
Yeah, but...
And so I guess my question is like, you know, if that's the strategy, if that's the strategy that, you know, we've already kind of got this cooked, which, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, very likely could be the case. When you start having to sell it to rank and file members is where things have not gone so well.
Well, I'm not sure that public or private has anything to do with it. I mean, look, there was a tentative deal on some workers' comp reforms that apparently labor and management had all signed off on. Dennis Hollingsworth, the Senate leader, posted the language of the deal on his website, and it was putting it out in the open that led the deal to fall apart. So, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. I think that...
Dams, water?
Get
dams?
It?
I got
wow.
it. That was good. Surface storage if you do, surface storage if you don't. Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Moving on. No, but point being that, you know, there's a lot of talk about whether or not doing deals out in the open helps or hurts. The reality is, I think there's a lack of political will or agreement sometimes on some of these big controversial issues.
Well, and doesn't it go to the whole systemic problems with the legislature and the legislative process that we keep talking about in this era of government reform is needed? Because I mean, you just said it. You're kind of cooked either way. And that's because, for lots of reasons, that's because of the power of interest groups. It's because, you know, the lack of experience, maybe term limits, and it might be, you know, I mean, it's all these things, in other words. And so, I mean, no matter what you do, you're going to have troubles on this, whether you do them in private or public.
Well, and, you know, in defense of the legislature here, I mean, the federal government hasn't had much more success in dealing with the water issues in California. So they've tried with this CalFed, you know, state-federal hybrid agency to solve some of these water problems, and it hasn't worked. So
I tell you, though, one of the things that's really going to be fascinating to watch, I think, and I've got a piece that, well, you'll hear this on the podcast is out on Friday. The piece airs on Friday, and it's nothing but a preview piece. It's not a, sorry, I'm running down my own piece.
Yeah.
It's not a huge story, but we're expecting the Water Committee on Friday to talk about how to pay for all
the
of this.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really tricky thing, because not only is it tricky to figure out how all the interest groups feel about financing, but if you go to the voters in the middle of recessionary times where we have done nothing but report about multi-billion dollar deficits of the state, and you ask them for a bond measure that comes out of the general fund in annual debt service payments, that's a tough sell. And I think everybody in the Capitol knows that's a tough sell. One of the reasons you saw Daryl Steinberg say $11 billion is too big, we can't do it. I mean, that was a fiscal reason and a political reason, too. So.
Yep. Yeah, and it's an easy thing to shoot down. You get teachers or the service employees saying, hey, look, the money that we're paying for this debt service is going to take more money away from the social programs, take more money away from schools.
$1 million from the farm workers.
Right. So
who knows?
So I think something tells me that may just be the tip of the iceberg.
Tip of the iceberg.
Again, another water.
See, that's another nice water reference. All right, well, let's drown our sorrows. See, that's back to cocktails, too. That's cocktails and water.
I think we've gone to the well too many times.
Okay, all right. I'm drowning in all of these. So we are at the end of session. We've got 1 week left in this first year of the legislative session. Though somebody posed the question the other day. You're the crack insider guy, Anthony, though I'm putting you on the spot.
Crack?
This isn't the end of a two-year session, which is pretty like total drop dead. Somebody was saying, well, could you go past Friday? Could you go into Saturday or Sunday? Isn't there some flexibility in year one of a two-year session? I leave it to you to figure out. Clock stop and people – you're not even clock stopping. Anyway.
No, it's not sine die, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't
want to say that because I didn't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. There you go. Latin makes things simpler. The other thing, and this is a way of answering without answering, is that there have been so many special sessions called that – I think everyone expects the legislature to be here talking about something through the fall. So, and look, none of these bills die on September 11th. At the very least, they get held over till next year.
Right.
So it's not the same urgency. But I do think on things like water, there is a hope to sort of use this deadline as some leverage to get a deal through.
Well, because those deadlines often do. Make the leverage thing happen, and strange little deals happen in the 11th hour. That's our third.
Yes.
That's our third topic.
Segway.
Yeah, you know, it's barely a segue. You wrote about in Capital Weekly shenanigans over a football stadium outside of Los Angeles.
All alleged and potential at this point, but
alleged and potential.
Yes,
I'm just trying to ponder that. Okay, go ahead.
Don't think too deeply about it.
But a
developer in Los Angeles, Ed Roski, Majestic Realty, has hired three big time lobbyists: Aaron Nimala, Don Parada's former chief of staff, former pro tem. Chris Kahn, the governor's former legislative secretary, and Scott Wetch, who represents some of the largest labor groups in the state. And they're making a major play to get some exemptions from the California Environmental Quality Act to build a football stadium out in the middle of on the Riverside, Los Angeles County
City
borders.
City of industry, right?
Which is sort of an oxymoron, yes. But
but we won't go there for now.
And
they've wanted this deal for a while.
Right.
I mean, that's what we were talking about this before we started recording the podcast. We saw it in the budget debate because it became part of that whole redevelopment agency money and extending the life of a redevelopment agency that would help the deal. And that didn't happen. That all went kaput.
No, and so now it's just a straight up exemption from the Environmental Quality Act. So. And there's been some haggling between the developer and local officials down there, particularly in the city of Walnut. I just wanted to say Walnut on the podcast. Hello, Walnut.
We're going to say that again in a moment, but a different Walnut.
Oh, okay.
Walnut Grove. But go ahead.
Okay. Teaser.
Segway.
Teaser.
Oh, do we need a cocktail? Go ahead.
But they're talking about it. And the mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa, is quietly on board. Coincidentally, of course, this developer, Ed Roski, has contributed $300,000 in the last year and a half to various causes championed by the mayor. Today in the Capitol, I saw Marielena Durazzo, the head of the LA County Labor Fed, walk into Senator Steinberg's office to talk about the deal. This is a jobs-creating bill for labor. That's why labor's on board. And it's, you know, it's one of these things that no one is talking very publicly about. But it's one. This is the silly season, right? This is the time of the year when deals that we haven't heard anything about sort of materialize out of the legislative ether and end
up sometimes successfully, sometimes not.
Right.
I mean, you know, the reality is that a lot of people see it as a way to push their proposal.
Right.
I'm always intrigued by how many of them don't go anywhere.
Right.
But it doesn't mean they don't try.
Yeah, and I think this one does face a long road. I mean, it's going to be tough to get it through. There are some conflict of interest questions with Bob Huff, the state senator from?
Diamond Bar.
Walnut.
No.
Oh, all right. Right near there. That area.
Okay. Go ahead.
Can I put Walnuts in my Diamond
please,
Bar?
Please, no. Please. We're at 26 minutes.
Okay, so that's the deal. It may or may not happen. Next.
They're at fourth and long.
Oh, this is their Hail Mary.
It's a Hail Mary. I used that already writing this week. Right, I can't use it anymore.
Okay,
quickly, I know.
Let's punt that.
Don't finish your cocktail quite yet. We've just got one more little snippet. We would be remiss if we didn't talk briefly about, I think, you know, probably the biggest political story of the week in terms of just complete raw politics, because it was a campaign.
Yep.
And it was a congressional campaign. It was a special election in the 10th Congressional District, which is east and north of the San Francisco Bay, stretching from all those suburb communities up a little bit toward Sacramento.
Five precincts in Sacramento County.
And the man from Walnut Grove, see, there's Walnut. John Garamendi, the lieutenant governor of California.
For now,
won the primary, at least won the right to represent the Democratic Party in the November 3rd general election, which most people believe, with all due respect to the Republican David Harmer, that is a Democratic district. Harmer is a decided underdog with the registration. It looks as though, if everything goes according to plan, John Garamendi becomes a member of Congress.
Right.
And now
that means,
well, yeah, but let's not go there quite yet. Let's just talk about the race for a moment. You had three incumbent office holders: Garamendi, Mark DeSaulnier, state senator from the area; Joan Buchanan, Fantastic. State assembly member from the area;
yes.
A few other Democrats in the race as well.
Yes.
It became a Garamendi-DeSaulnier race by the end, because mm-hmm. the polling showed they were the top two there. But Garamendi pulled away with a plurality mm-hmm. of votes there, but not enough to win the seat outright. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, you know, people could sit and talk about this forever, whether too many candidates split the vote. Joan Buchanan here and DeSaulnier here did the whole campaign about Garamendi not living in the district. Did that backfire on DeSaulnier? Who knows?
Right. Who knows? You know, labor was mostly behind Garamendi, although DeSaulnier did have some labor support.
Well, there was
support.
A state and local split there,
right.
Yeah.
And Buchanan getting into the race, I think, angered a lot of her colleagues in the assembly. We talked about she faced a tough election to get here. They spent a lot of money electing her.
Just last year.
Yeah, and there was a sense that if she somehow won that seat, that Democrats would lose that assembly seat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting sort of some of the potential damage, at least short term, some of these candidates took in this risk in running for Congress. But now, as it turns out, John Garamendi is going to be the party's nominee, probably the next congressman from the area.
Get us to the
vacancy.
The great parlor game, which we talked about as a parlor game weeks ago, because
right.
everybody thought Garamendi had a chance with the name ID. I mean, he's been on the ballot across California a lot of times.
Yep.
So now the great parlor game is going to begin because, you know, everybody wants to know, what would Arnold Schwarzenegger do? Who could he appoint that the democratically controlled legislature would agree to?
Or at least not reject. That's the way it works.
Yeah, yeah.
The governor
right.
appoints, and
right.
unless they're rejected by either house.
Implicit acceptance. Right. But yeah, yeah, right. Anyway, how does that work when you are very close to an outright election for that seat in 2010?
In which three, well, at least three members of the legislature are running for, right? Mm-hmm. Jeff Denham and
Dean Flores.
And Dean Flores and Alan Lowenthal. Mm-hmm. Now, are there... I know there are others.
Somebody will email us. Anyway, sorry. Just let that slide. You've had a couple of cocktails at this far into the podcast. But, I mean,
about the only time we ever care about the lieutenant governor, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, there are a whole lot of interesting scenarios there about moderate Republicans, placeholder Republican or Democrats. John Burton, the chair of the California Democratic Party, floated the idea of Richard Reardon this week in a conversation with a reporter. Richard Reardon, former mayor of L.A., moderate Republican who...
Former education
secretary. Yeah, lots of stories about him wanting to run for governor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, he did run for governor.
Wanted to be governor. Sorry, he did run for governor. He lost the primary. But, you know, floated that name. Then another longtime reporter floated the idea of Bruce McPherson online this week.
Again.
People have talked about Abel Maldonado since he's had some interest in those kind of things before. But again, you've
Bob
got Democrats.
Hertzberg.
Yeah, exactly. You might need to have a Democrat. Exactly. I mean, who the heck knows? But it's going to
be
only
the shadow knows.
But it's fun. It is fun.
That's what passes for fun in our business. That's how pathetic we are, people.
And there are a lot of ramifications. I mean, you know, because you do give that person the incumbency if they want to run for the office in 2010, if they can make all the deadlines to get on the ballot.
And they get to go to EC Regents meetings.
Although, you know, he could leave the seat completely open, could he not?
He could. Would anybody notice?
Well, that gets to the point. I mean, what happens then? So he leaves the state. And the Speaker pro tem becomes the acting governor. Uh-huh. Errol Steinberg becomes the acting governor.
Is he number three? Is that how it works?
I think it is him before the Speaker. Well, someone again will email me and tell me. But
check my constitution and
you
get back to
you. You can always have an acting governor who doesn't have to be the lieutenant governor. And then you could zero out the budget of the lieutenant governor's office.
And end the furloughs. Well, right.
And world peace right there.
There we go.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching that one. So with that, I guess we'll be back for our end of session podcast next week.
Yeehaw.
Anthony will be another year older and off we'll go. So finish your cocktails. Thanks for listening. See you next time.